The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Why do we see a tomboy as something to be celebrated in a girl, but to call a boy a sissy is an insult? I'm joined now by author Lisa Sellin-Davis to talk about how doing away with gendered messaging on toys and clothes, indeed, could lead to a happier Christmas for children. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's talk about the gendering of children's clothes and children's toys. Was it always thus that, you know, a couple of hundred years ago in the time of Dickens, that a boy had a train or something like that, and a girl had a doll?
Well, actually, most, up until about 100 years ago, especially here in the States, most clothes and toys for very young kids were totally ungendered, and kids were dressed according to age, not sex, and their clothes were similar. And there are a lot of reasons for that. We didn't have, you know, as much the kind of manufacturing we have, and we certainly obviously didn't have the kind of marketing we had. But we also had a different understanding of sex, gender, and sexuality. And at that time, people didn't want to emphasize the sex of a child. So everyone got to play with the same thing according to age. And then as studies of homosexuality became more popular and that became part of the collective consciousness, there was an effort to raise especially little boys to perform their gender role very early to keep them from being gay. So it's actually the study of homosexuality that led to having very specific boys, toys, and clothes to prepare them to be, you know, proper men.
Now, Lisa, these days we would look for information on that. You know, if you bring a boy up playing with dolls, if you bring a girl up playing with trucks, how do they turn out? We'd look for statistics and information and so on. But in those days, that probably wasn't the kind of study they did. And in fact, even today, it would be ethically very difficult to do a study like that.
Actually, at the turn of the last century, there was a study in America of boys, and it found that something like 79% of young boys, or it might be more, it might be 80-something percent of young boys and 70-something percent of older boys all did play with dolls. And eventually we created action figures, which are dolls. But they're just called something that's palatable to adults of boys and allows boys to not berate each other for playing with them. So, and then there actually are a lot of studies that show how kids play differently when you change the gendered messaging. So if you show young children a bunch of pictures of girls playing with cars, and then you say, pick up a car or a truck and say, is this a girl's toy or a boy's toy? They'll say, oh, it's a girl's toy. So there are some innate preferences that have mostly to do with hormones, but they're not so pronounced with children, and they are kind of malleable. And I think that's what people think of as this biological urge of girls like princess dresses and boys like trucks. That, you know, there may be some kind of biological kernel of that, but the truth is most of them are gravitating toward things that have been marked appropriate for them. So they like what's been marked as girl or boy because they've been told. And if you change that, they feel more open to trying it. And if they don't know, some studies show that if you show them a toy like a silver spaceship, and they don't know if that's a boy's toy or a girl toy. If they like it, if it's a boy and he likes it, he'll say, "Oh, this is a boy's toy." So they're making a lot of assumptions about sex and their preferences.
Yeah. Now, parents will often tell you, you know, no matter how they try to gender neutralize the toys, not so much the clothes, I suppose, because it's always a bit confusing. I mean, young girls will wear trousers and so on quite normally when they're very young. The clothes, in fact, between young boys and young girls are often very, very similar. It might be when they go to school and school uniforms that clothing becomes mm-hmm. different. But many parents will tell you, you know, if you put a boy, a young boy, a toddler, in a room full of kind of classic boys stuff and a whole pile of dolls as well, that their son just gravitates towards the trucks and the trains
yeah.
and the hammers and the guns and all the rest. And if you do the same to his sister, she will just thumb her nose at all that stuff and go over to the dolls. And they say, it's nothing to do. We did our best to be egalitarian yeah. here, but this is what they do.
Well, parents do find that. And again, that's why they think it's biological. And I'm not denying that there are some biological sort of urges that go with biological sex. However, what parents don't realize is that the biological urge is to claim a membership in the group. And so they are gravitating toward what is associated with their group. And one of the ways that we know that is changeable is that we had this period in the 1970s, what I always call the tomboy heyday, when girls were actively encouraged to partake of what had been marked for boys. So all of a sudden there was, you know, in America, it became Little League had to legally let girls in, and girls had short hair, and girls were wearing the same, you know, they were wearing boys' clothes, and there was this concerted effort to open boys' worlds to girls, and it was very successful. And there were often generational swings, so that was replaced by kind of girl power and then princesses, and that era is gone. But there have been plenty of times when we've changed kids' preferences. And again, none of their early childhoods used to be gendered. And when you mentioned that, you know, with clothes that girls can wear pants, well, 100 years ago, you know, both little boys and girls wore dresses, but only boys could wear pants, you know, and now we have the opposite. So what we think of as normal can switch generationally, but I think people are under the impression that that their kids, that because they've tried to kind of gender neutralize their kids' world, that it must be biological. But their kids have already gotten so many messages from the larger society about what's appropriate for them based on their category. And that's why I'm focused on the messaging.
Yeah. Here's an interesting text from Kathy. She says, my daughter got a Barbie car and my son got a turtle doll figure for Christmas. This is back in 1993. They looked at each other's presents and immediately swapped. It could have been Barbie, but he wanted the car and she wanted the doll. Uh-huh. End of.
Right, right, right. But again, I mean, some of that may be biological there in some level, although cars are so recent in human history, it's hard to imagine how that could be rooted in our evolution. But those kids have been taught, you know, by age three, most kids know all the stereotypes associated with their category. So they're performing that, they learn to perform that role very early. But they don't know the difference between sex stereotypes and sex. So they will think a boy who puts on a dress is a girl, and it makes them, you know, you'll notice that they start kind of policing each other very young. Oh, that's not making fun of each yeah. other. That's not what girls do. That's not what boys do. And, you know, that's because those messages have come not just from their parents and their family. They're deep seated messages.
Is there evidence from single parent families, for example, how that works? I mean, the club that maybe a little girl wants to belong to is the club that her mother's in. And a little boy might want to belong to the club that his father's in. So if his father's in the garage, you know, doing DIY, Maybe he just wants to join that particular club, and so on and so forth. But in single parent families, you've got that parent, be it male or female, doing everything.
That's interesting. I had one of those families, and you know, it was always my mom's toolbox that I was looking at. I haven't done research on single parent families, though I have done research on families where the parents upend gender roles on some level themselves. So the more, for instance, a father spends time with children, with girls, doing typically masculine things, you know, hunting or fixing the car, the more that impacts the girl and makes her feel that that's available to her. But the same with the kind of the more parents model egalitarian, you know, an egalitarian marriage, the more the children, you know, those kind of gender roles affect the children. But there are actually also studies that the more testosterone a mother has, the more likely she is to have a tomboy kind of girl. So there are there are biological elements to this, but the culture kind of affects everyone equally, regardless of their biological profile.
There was a study, I'm not sure of its scientific provenance, but that if women were forced by necessity to do men's jobs, you know, the traditional jobs, maybe physical jobs, or powerful political jobs, for example, that they actually generated more testosterone in themselves.
Oh, sure. I mean, our hormonal profiles are constantly evolving. I mean, and I think if you're a middle-aged woman, you know that incredibly well, where you are going through an entire second puberty, you know, in your late 40s. So, you know, that stuff changes in response to the environment, your behavior all the time. And I think gender is one of those subjects that everyone thinks they know about because we all have a very personal experience of it. But when you look into it, it's so much more complicated than you can ever imagine. And so much of our experience of gender is rooted in our culture. It's how we understand what ideas we have about people based on their bodies. And it has, as I said before, it switches so much generationally. So even when you're talking about this idea of men's jobs and women's jobs, you know, that's changed so much from generation to generation. And even, you know, there are so many names that were men's names, like Ashley and Kimberly and Evelyn, and there's a huge list of names that were men's names. And then the more that parents named their daughters those names, the more they became associated with girls, and the less comfortable parents of boys felt naming their sons what was being perceived as a girl's name. And that happens over and over with toys and clothes and colors, that something gets moved over from the boys section to the girls section, and then the boys don't feel safe accessing it. And that's really what I'm talking about, which is there's so much good stuff, important stuff marked as for girls, like kindness and empathy and the toys that encourage those communication skills, right? If boys don't feel comfortable accessing them, then they miss out on this opportunity to develop those skills that girls' toys help develop. And it's easier for girls, as you said right in the beginning. They in the past have often been encouraged to partake of the toys that would develop, you know, engineering skills, or independence or dominance. And so the less we can label those things as for girls and for boys, the less we have to deal with kids feeling like they can't partake of them.
Well, your book, Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dare to Be Different, is being re-released, so it should make for a fascinating read, available everywhere, I'm sure. But its author, Lisa Sellin-Davis, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.